Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations of Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you've been to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One. Including this episode, I have 3 episodes left, and I have just enough time probably to get it done before we go away to Germany. I meant to do a finale, and I meant to do a movie versus episode. I think I'll do the finale, obviously, after we get back, and the movie versus, maybe I'll make that part of a series where I do it after I read the book for the Dungeons & Dragons movie. Even though I heard some distressing news the other day that maybe they won't be making a second one of those, which is kind of upsetting. Who knows? Stranger things have happened. In this episode, I'm going to read and react to chapters 31, 32, and 33. Chapter 31. Wade works to get everything done that night. He copies as much as possible onto the drive. Then he submits a Sixer requisition order to get something secret and have it delivered in 2 days. Then he zeroes out his indenturement balance. Finally, he disables the locks on his anklet and earpiece. They both fall off with little fanfare. He needs to get going and quick. Several IOI security people will now be looking for him. If they find him, he's as good as a dead man. He finishes on the Oasis, logs out, and removes the equipment. Dressing in a maintenance uniform, he puts band-aids over his bleeding ear and tells his room he needs to use the bathroom. Instead, he goes to the elevator and requests the lobby. In his signature move, once he realizes how much attention the surveillance of him will demand, he flips off the camera. He expects an unwelcoming crew in the lobby. He only gets a typical office building lobby with people milling about here and there. He all but whistles his way through the lobby and past the guards. Halfway to the lobby, he notices that he still has on his special slippers. Instead of panicking, he plows through. Of course, that's when he hears, "Sir?" A woman's voice. Something about her tone stops him. She points out that his ear is still bleeding. Quote unquote, "a lot," she helpfully adds. He thanks her and leaves without another word. Once out, he drops the anklet in a trash receptacle and makes his way to the mailbox. It's an automated P.O. box system, and he orders some stuff to be delivered there. A portable Oasis rig and the amenities. There's also a gun in there. He then tries to find a login port off the IOI grid. His first order of business after logging in for the first time in 8 days was to reply to Artemis to get out of where she was due to her status with IOI. He also asks her to meet him in H's basement. He can't help himself and adds a P.S. about how beautiful he thinks she is. He also writes to H and Soto, giving them copies of their files with the invitation. He erases his fake identity and becomes Wade again. He then goes to an Oasis tavern, parenthetically I guess you'd call it, logs in, boots up a copy of Max, and gets to work. He sends incriminating evidence, IOI attempt to kill him and how they killed Dido, and the chat link session he had with Sorrento. Then he composes an all email to everyone in the Oasis and logs into H's basement. They all are there waiting. Chapter 32. He receives a hero's welcome, but has no time for such. He ensures that both Artemis and Shoto are safe and fills them in on how he was able to infiltrate IOI to get the files. Artemis expresses how upset she was that Wade invaded their privacy by looking at the file. H calms them both before things get out of hand again. He gives them time to look through the files. When she sees what's in there, her stance softens. He breaks it to them that the Sixers don't even know how to open the gate. They can't believe it until he tells them that this one is different, and then he shows them a video of the Sixers' first attempt to open the crystal gate. He explains that nobody can even get into the castle without the key. The video shows Sorrento crossing the floor to the gate. Above, etched 3 words: charity, hope, faith. When he puts in the key and turns it, nothing happens. They try many other things, reciting the words in Latin, Elvish, Klingon. Then they try things with 1 Corinthians 13:13, because the words are in that scripture. They're actually not. I looked it up the other day. It's love instead of one of them, I think. And then it says, "and the greatest is love." That's the famous quote, so they even got that wrong. Also, those are the names of 3 martyred Catholic saints. They all agree that those attempts are nonsense because Halliday was an atheist. Charity, hope, faith. Where have I heard that? Artemis. It does sound familiar. H. Wade first teases them by saying it took him a while to place it before giving them a big hint. Sing them in reverse order. Give you 3 as a magic number. That's right. Schoolhouse Rock. Well, I wanted to upgrade the production value of this and actually include the 3 as a magic number here on the podcast, but I can't find it. Maybe if I can figure out a way to work it in, I'll put it in the post credits or something like that. It takes 3, no more, no less. You don't have to guess. 3 is the magic number. So then you need 3 keys to open the final gate. But what happens after is anyone's guess. Can only one enter? Must all 3? While they hate Halliday for this twist, they also love him for putting the wrinkle in, since the Sixers got there first and haven't been able to figure it out. Speaking of the Sixers, Shota tells them to shit or get off the pot. H cools his jets. The Sixers put up a shield, mass their army, and will most likely kill anyone who tries. But Wade has a plan for that, right? Of course. What is it? He won't tell yet how he plans to deal with the shield, but he shows them the email he wrote to get every Gunter in the Oasis to help take down the army. They seem skeptical at first that spamming for help will actually work. Wade convinces them that the others will show and that they will fight. He asks them to send the message to their contacts, post them on their blogs, broadcast them on the video feeds. They have 36 hours to get it done. While they continue planning, Og materializes in the basement. Chapter 33. Wait, what? They're in a private chat room. Yes, he concedes, but he and Halliday gave themselves super user access. That gives him certain powers, including being able to come into private chat rooms uninvited. They come to the conclusion at the same time as me. He was the glitch that knocked over the comics earlier in the book. He came because he wants to help, because Halliday asked him, before he died, to help ensure the integrity of the contest. They are surprised because they thought the two weren't on speaking terms. Og explains that they weren't, but Halliday called him to ask him to make the promise. He offers his home in Oregon as a base for them to take on the rest of the contest. He has already figured out their travel. H and Wade make plans to travel together. H warns Wade about the disappointment of reality, but Wade blows it off. However, he admits to being nervous about meeting everyone. He leaves the chat room, sends out his message to the Gunters, and all hell breaks loose. News reports Gunters declare war and accuse IOI of attempted kidnapping and murder. Wade takes a nap while waiting for H. H announces his arrival with a call. Wade comes out to see the RV with blacked out windows. He makes his way over. A door automatically opens and a stepladder extends. He looks around and eventually sees a heavyset African-American girl at the steering wheel. Well, shit, how's that for a surprise? Wade feels initially betrayed for being lied to, but it quickly goes. He just laughs. They exchange pleasantries before Wade approaches the elephant in the room, though not very eloquently. He knew H kept a secret, but never imagined. Imagine what? A fat black chick? Parenthetically, my paraphrasing, but the last part is all H. Wade goes the other way. Quote, unquote, young African-American woman. H tells him that there's a reason she kept it secret. Wade doesn't care. H still wants to tell him. They make their way to Og's jet. After boarding and getting in the air, Wade gives H time to explain. It was her mother's idea. Helen Harris, called H by her mother, was about Wade's age. Her father died in Afghanistan when she was a baby. Her mother worked from home and chose a white male avatar. H did the same when given a chance. H last spoke to her mother on her 18th birthday. She came out as gay. Her mother kicked her out of the house. Of course, none of that matters to Wade. He still considers H a close, personal friend. They arrive at Og's place, the spitting image of Rivendell from Lord of the Rings. Everyone is already there. Wade fanboys a bit, and then they fall into a conversation about why Og and Halliday fell out. He explains that it is the ages-old story of a woman. Halliday fell for Og's wife and couldn't bear the thought of not having her. With that knowledge, Wade prepares to log into the Oasis and start the assault on the Sixers in an attempt to get the Kate and win this thing. And now for my reaction. I struggled with what to write for my quote-unquote big theme this time. At first, I thought it might be cooperation. That makes sense with the big reveal that they need to work as a trio to open the gate. It also contrasts with the discussion about capitalism last time. But I feel like that might make more sense in one of the last 2 episodes when cooperation actually saves the day. I then thought about writing about online versus in real life, but I think that I either A, already wrote about that, or B, decided that it wasn't a deep enough topic for such an in-depth analysis. Then, as has been happening, Klein bailed me out. He told H's story, and I got my topic. Time to talk about prejudice. But first, let's talk a little bit about this plot. I joked a couple of times about Deus Ex Machina, and, mind you, I don't even mind that much as a plot device. Like the quote-unquote it was all a dream or quote-unquote dark and stormy night, they are overused plot devices that offer an quote-unquote unsatisfying conclusion. Because, once again, we are gaslit to believe that anything worth having needs to be quote-unquote earned through blood, sweat, and tears. But sometimes, folks, you just get lucky. Shit just goes your way. So no, I don't care that this incredibly intricate and complicated plot point got resolved in only a couple of chapters. Let Wade cook. Besides, it's fiction. Can we just enjoy a story without the crush of reality? Look, I get it. Klein put some very real issues into the story to prove points. Additionally, as mentioned, we all attach our own meaning to the story. So it's a bit jarring when something happens that takes you out of that fiction. But ultimately, we just need to enjoy the story for what it is. Then, independently, we can discuss those real-world issues. And today's real-world issue is prejudice. How's that for a transition? A bit awkward, but honestly better than what I planned before, so I'll take it. As I write this, it is June 19th, the day known as Juneteenth. I know that I need to take what I see online with several grains of salt. Nevertheless, I don't understand the people who feel the need to diminish these days. As I mowed the lawn, I came up with two different ways to react to this. First, Americans would rather work some random Monday in June instead of celebrate the end of one of our original sins. Second, Americans, don't tear down those statues and erase history. Also, Americans, why must we celebrate Juneteenth? I get it, but we live in a meme world. And honestly, meme activism went a long way to helping to convert me from the pyramid death scheme of capitalism to a commie cuck. I told you last time, the hippie part comes from my parents. Cuck is just an unoriginal insult thrown around by quote-unquote alphas, parenthetically, lol, don't get me started, on the internet. They target men who don't conform to their narrow ideas of what makes a man. I know I fit that bill, so I take the power away from them by using it myself. Wow, that was a digression in another digression. Impressive, even for me. But back to the subject at hand. The crux of both of these reactions is my life's philosophy about prejudice. I simply don't understand it. Like Wade, I take the information given to me, and I process accordingly. My wife and I both have individuals in our life who identify as trans. We talked about it again yesterday, during the Alanis Morissette concert. This would actually be on Sunday, since I'm recording this on Tuesday, but I remarked, like I did with Liam the day before, that more and more comedians have a bit about dead names. Hari Kondabolu, Trevor Noah, and Roy Wood all have bits that I've heard recently. And you can argue that they're lefty loonies like me, so of course they do. But that's not the point. Keep up. P. Diddy, parenthetically, Puff Daddy, Diddy, whatever, Ice Cube, Hulk Hogan, Meta World Peace. None of these are the given names, but you use them with no problem. Meta and Diddy are the best examples, because you knew them as something else before, and people transitioned to the new name with no problem. Hell, Prince had y'all calling him the artist formerly known as. But, as Roy Wood said, a dude named Jack wants to be called Jill, and all of a sudden you have a problem with it? This is when people want to argue that swapping genders isn't natural. Meanwhile, you have species that swap because they lost a penis sword fight with a rival. Others grow up into male or female, pending a shift in temperature. And still others swap seemingly spontaneously to maintain a balance. So yeah, get out of here with that argument. For similar reasons, prejudice just never made any sense to me. As a result, I spent much of my life ignorant to my own implicit bias and prejudice. I often made the black, white, brown, blue, green, or I don't see color statements. I know, but I educated myself, and I know why those things are counterproductive. I don't say them anymore. Furthermore, I actively speak out against them. What really exhausts me, parenthetically, and I acknowledge that if I'm tired, I can only imagine those who live this reality, is that I still have to have the N-word discussion with people. I just had it again earlier this year. Like, just give it up, y'all, for crying out loud. But we can't stop having the conversations. I said it before. I'm trying to get better. Every day. And while I read and heard some of the criticisms of the book about bias and prejudice, I feel like Klein is trying too. Some of the stuff is just awkward guy stuff, and every time it happens, you roll your eyes. But most of it comes from, I think, a place of good intention. I guess we all just do what we can and keep doing better, and hopefully moving forward. Because, after all, we are all in this together. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles, a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where there is the daily RPG calendar, the Voidspark Chronicles. I am not doing it daily, and it's going to go on a hiatus when we go to Germany, but I couldn't figure out what to do about it, so it's just the way it is right now. I will be back on Thursday with the next episode of Ready Player One. I proved to myself that I can write these things in a day if I have the time, so I will definitely be back on Thursday, and then I'll finish it up on Sunday or Monday before we go to Germany. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys. Hear the birdies.
We are two guys.